Hello?
Hey, Sam.
Hey, Dan. How are you?
Good, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Hey, Dan, just keeping it 100. You call right into the podcast. We're right in the middle of this. Thank you so much for calling in.
Yeah, man. Thank you for having me, man.
Oh, man. Hey, you are such a great guest, and I am. The pleasure is all mine because I have been a fan of your comedy for quite some time now. And I mean, the writing, the producing, the stand-up, that's great. But I guess where I really fell in love with your comedy is way back when you were working at Playboy Radio.
Yeah, man, the Playboy Morning Show.
Oh, man. Hold on, wait. I'm getting ahead of myself. Please, before we jump into this interview, everything Dan Cummins, please plug away. Your email address, your website, social media, all of that.
Yeah, man. It's dancummins.tv. And also, I do my podcast, timesuckpodcast.com. And on social media, you can just find me, Dan Cummins Comedy, across the social media, Instagram, Facebook, all that. And then Time Suck Podcast, also across Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all that stuff.
Okay. Now, back to what I was saying about Playboy Radio. Like, one of the morning show, I loved it, is because I am, during that time, I am a diehard Opie and Anthony listener.
Oh, okay.
But I worked at a place where some days I didn't get a chance to pick. You get Opie and Anthony one day, somebody else picked Playboy or somebody else, you know, we're in control of different.
Sure.
Yeah, so like I stumbled upon you because how you handled yourself, you were smart, you was funny. And one of the things, and this is not a diss, I want to make this perfectly plain, you did all of that and nobody was there to listen to you. It's Playboy Radio. You were
exactly. No, it was an interesting job. They paid well, but we used to joke all the time working there that eventually, like a fake wall would just open up in the building, and someone would come out and just reveal that the entire thing had been a joke. that it was a fake company. That he did it for some eccentric billionaire. Did the whole thing for his own amusement. No, we constantly joked about having no audience.
No, it's not necessarily no audience, because I was listening, I guess, if you want to take that. But it's just like...
That's true.
Like, with Playboy Radio, when people hear that, they immediately think about the girls. And they're just...
Oh, yes. And we would joke about that, too. Where it's like, nobody... Especially when they were watching it on the video version.
Right.
No one was watching it for me. And I totally understood. I wouldn't have been watching it for me, either.
But you held it together because... And correct me if I'm wrong, some of these young ladies, and I'm not shaming, I'm not putting anyone down, they weren't exactly the sharpest knives in the drawer.
No,
and
they were not.
Then when you're up at that early in the morning, it was like the perfect storm. So like a lot of times, it was a lot of you steering the ship. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Oh, for sure. It was totally, you know, my co-host, Andrea, was fantastic, but she didn't want to be involved in the pre-production of any of the segments or anything like that. She wanted to be surprised, wanted to be in the moment, which is great. And then the girls, you know, they just want to look good and get some FaceTime on Playboy. And then there's the producers behind the glass. And then me, it's like my job was to kind of run everything as the show was going because, you know, it had to end at a certain time. We actually had a break in the middle that we had to end at. So I just had to make sure that everything got moved along, everybody got interviewed who was supposed to get interviewed, and we ended on time. And it was organized chaos every single time.
Okay. And from there, it turned into something else. And then you kind of like, I guess, fell back in love with stand-up. And that's where, like, you already had me in your pocket, but that's when... What, I gotta be honest, man. Just me, you, and the wall. What made you leave? Like, couldn't that money be a little tempting?
Yeah, well, you know, I was still doing stand up on the weekends, probably twice a month when I was working at Playboy. But I just realized like it was a sinking ship. I mean, the brand is not doing well. You know, Playboy had its heyday many years before my time there, and it's still around. But everybody working there behind the scenes knew the writing on the wall. And there was constant layoffs, you know, behind the scenes, shows getting cut left and right. And so I signed a 2-year contract when I showed up, and I knew a few months into it that I had to have, like, an exit strategy. So, you know, I just saved some money, and then I actually put that money initially into starting off my own show, my own podcast. I mean, kind of the way things work now in the world of social media and podcasts and YouTube and all that, I actually make a better living doing my own show than I did there. So it all worked out.
All right, and speaking about that, you were just here in Detroit not too long ago, and I got a chance to catch a show at the Magic Bag. Like, one of the things I love, and it's just like, you're on the road now.
Right.
For lack of a better term, are you on tour, or is it just kind of like a weekend? Well, it's how's
you know,
it? Yeah.
You're kind of always on tour, but I am starting to do some, like, more of a proper tour, where it's like, I just had some posters made up and everything. I'm calling it the Flat Earth Tour. And like in April, I'll be doing a run of 8 nights in a row, you know, going, or 7 or 8, something like that. Starting in like, Nashville, I think, and then going down through Alabama and Georgia, Florida, and Texas, 3 nights in Texas. So that's more of like a proper tour where it's like more like, kind of like the Magic Bag, rock
right.
clubs and, small theaters for the most part. But you're kind of as a comic. Most comics I know are just kind of always on tour.
That's why I just asked that question. I'm like, yeah, it's sort of like a perpetual, always on tour. That's just how you do it.
Yeah, cause that's how you get new material. And that's one thing that, you know, people who aren't big stand-up fans don't really understand. It's like a band, you know, it's a very different process for them. They go in the studio, they go, you know, just get together when they're not touring, and they jam out new songs and they work out new songs. And they get it all going, and then they make an album, and then they promote that album with those songs. But as a comic, you build your song, so to speak, mm-hmm. during your shows. Like you just work out new material as you're going along. So you're continually in a process of working on new material and, you know, moving old material out of the act, recording old material, putting back, you know, more new stuff. So yeah, it's just kind of a constantly evolving process.
And speaking of new material, I want to talk about, this is a ham-fisted segue, but your new special, Maybe I'm the Problem, on Pandora. I would only like to say, like, because that just came out, so I only imagine right now you're in the rebuilding part, because you just
right.
let, first of all, I loved it. It was awesome.
Thank you.
I really dug it, because myself, I'm a father, I'm a husband, and I see, like, after following your career, like, I see the progression, if you will, without giving too much away. If you sat back and listened to your last 3 albums, you see the progression and growth. So yeah, you're right. When you are touring, you're making new stuff because you're having new experiences. So
right, exactly.
I can only imagine, like, when you go city to city, you're probably not just sitting in your hotel room, just sitting back, just binging out on Netflix. I would imagine you're just exploring, going with the people, right?
Yep, just constantly working on new stuff, working on, you know, new podcast episodes, working on new stand-up. Just kind of constantly working on creating, you know, new content. And now I've done enough stand-up albums, I'm also trying to work on, you know, rememorizing some of my old kind of bits, because I realized, you know, people, they don't want to just hear the new anymore. Now I've done enough albums where they'd love to hear one track from this album or one track from another. So I'm trying to make it more like a band a little bit in that sense.
Like a greatest hits tour?
Yeah, you know, we'll do like, you know, 40 minutes of the new stuff, but then close with 15 minutes of the old stuff. You know, do a little give and take.
Okay.
So I'm trying to change the way I do it a little bit. And then, you know, when you're working on recording something new, well, then you got to go all new for a certain amount of shows to kind of get it down. But I've had the pleasure of working with Brian Regan a couple weekends here and there, and I love the way he does his shows, where he does that. He does about 50, 55 minutes, new stuff, and then he does a little encore. And for the encore, he does like 10 minutes of the old stuff. And it's fantastic to see his fans, you know, get to hear the bits they kind of fell in love with, so...
And that's very cool. That's interesting because, like, I want to talk about your album a little bit because you're being, without giving anything away, but, like, you are one of the first, if not few guys, being totally pushed on, like, platforms like Pandora. I mean, like, most people.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing in vogue is, like, a Netflix or maybe a Hulu or Epic special. But, like, Pandora really took you on their own. Like, can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, I got really lucky with Pandora where I didn't even realize I was on Pandora for a while. I thought Pandora was only music. I didn't even know there was conference stations. And then, you know, the way Pandora works is, you know, their programmers will, you know, put people in maybe some of the more popular comedy stations or whatever initially, but if you don't get the right amount of thumbs ups, you know, it's all about their analytics that way. How many thumbs up are you getting compared to thumbs down? How many skips? All that kind of stuff. And then, you know, basically, like, the better your tracks are rated, the more play you get. And so it was a very kind of natural, organic progression where I ended up talking to them a couple years back. I did a different little Pandora deal with them. And that was when they kind of told me that, you know, that basically I just have a really good rating where they said that, you know, my first, like, 3-4 albums were some of the best rated albums. And that's what got me spinning a lot in their system. And then just kind of kept going. And, man, that was a career saver because, you know, like, I was in with Comedy Central for a couple of years a while back, and I did a couple of specials with them. And that was fantastic. But then you reach a point where it becomes less about funny and more about rating.
Mm-hmm.
And when I did an hour special with them, it just didn't rate the amount they wanted it to rate. Like, it just didn't get the viewership they were hoping for. And so basically, I just fell out of favor with them. And so, you know, if it wasn't for Pandora, I mean, who knows? I might not even be doing stand-up now. You know, I might have, like, you know, stop selling tickets altogether. And so that really gave me a kind of new life.
But that's what's interesting about it because, like, I just mentioned, like, you know, having new life on global platforms such as, like, Netflix and stuff like that. But, like,
yeah,
one of the things that made it cool, I want to say, is because I just talked about how we used to fight over the radio. Now,
right. Guys
at the job can now listen to a straight-up special or, like, oh, that's the guy who made me laugh. And then it's sort of like reverse Netflix, if you will, because
right.
You're listening to it. I mean, you could take it because Netflix, it's convenient because it's at home. But, like,
sure,
with Pandora and the streaming services, you could take that, you could listen to it at home, you could take it in your car, you could be on the job, you could do this. And now, not just with, now, you can essentially jumpstart a fan base.
Right, exactly. No, there's an entirely new way. I mean, that's what Pandora's done for me. It's like people listen to me on their commutes, listen to me in their cubicle with their headphones on. And just, you know, you get to hear track after track, and, you know, they pretty soon they want to come see you live, and then they tell you your friends. It's such a cool way to get new fans. And like, that's like the podcast, you know, that's what I realized with podcasts, where at first I was really hesitant to make my podcast more than like 40 minutes long. So I'm like, I don't want to take up people's time. But then I realized, no, they want you to take up their time because commutes are longer than ever.
That's correct.
People they're trying to kill 8 hours at work. You know, they got a job that doesn't really use their brain that much, you know, and they can put their headphones on and listen to a podcast, a stand-up album, whatever, and still be able to do their job. And they just want as much content as you can give them. And it's a whole new way to meet fans.
And I'm glad you brought that up, your podcast. I love your podcast because, for starters, you leave this up to the listeners every week. And they give you a topic, and you do your own research, and then
right.
You give your... I look at it almost like one of those old-school book reports you used to get in school.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, man, please tell the people about your podcast, Time Suck. I love it.
Oh, thank you, Sam. Yeah, Time Suck is just, you know, one listener suggests a topic every week. About every 3 weeks now, I end up doing a bonus episode as well. People vote for those on Instagram. And yeah, and it's all just people email. I mean, God, we probably get 10, 20 different topics emailed to the show every day now. And then they get added to this big list. And now premium listeners can comb through the list and pick them out. But it's all over the map. It can be a serial killer. It could be Jack the Ripper. Or it could be the Stanford Prison Experiments. Or it could be, you know, a certain battle in World War II. or it could be, you know, how did the Egyptians build the pyramids? It can be like anything that's interesting. Being interesting is the only criteria. And what I try and do is do the most research I can. I have a little team now that can help. And we just try to put together the best research we can. And I just try to make that, present the information in the funniest way possible. Just make it fun. Just get like a fun association with learning. And I try not to be too partisan and too political, because everything's polarized right now. It's like
right.
Everything's like put into like liberal camps or conservative camps. I try to give the the no BS camp. Like, here's what I think happened in this situation. Here's the facts. This is what it looks like to me, and I hope you enjoyed learning it. And it's been really cool. I've never built fans the way I have since I started Time Stuff. They're just really cool, curious, open-minded people who enjoy learning, but, you know, want a little more spice in their learning. They don't want it to be some dry NPR-type presentation. They don't mind some profanity. They don't mind some, you know, raw kind of commentary thrown in, and it's been a blast.
Now, here's my thing. Is there any subject that you just won't just touch? It's just like, all right, I don't feel like doing that one. Like, is there...
No, but there's some that I'm trying to be really careful with. Like right now, I'm getting lots of emails for two actually different topics, probably the last few months. And one is immigration, and one is gun control. And I've kind of learned from previous episodes. Like I did a transgender episode a while back. I did one on Pizzagate. And whenever something is inherently political, I just have realized that. I just have to spend more time than I do on, like, a biography, for example, just to make sure that I've thought through my, not arguments, but thought through the presentation and make sure that I'm being fair. Because it's really easy, like on gun control, for example, or immigration, to get very emotional about the topics and then kind of end up pushing an agenda. And that's what I'm trying not to do, because I feel like everybody else in society is doing that.
Now,
I just want to present it. Be like, hey, man, here's the stats. Here's what this study says. Here's what that study says. Here's maybe what I think. I could be wrong. You know, let's talk about it.
And that's very fair that you do this. But one question, as a listener of Time Suck, I really always wanted to know, do you clear your browser history after the research? Because anyone who gets your laptop or tablet is like, what is this guy doing?
Oh yeah, no. I don't clear my browsers. I probably should. I remember thinking about that. I think I did an episode on ISIS that wasn't very far removed from doing an episode about the dark web. So I'm like, I gotta be on a watch list right now. There's no way I'm not on somebody's radar at the NSA or FBI or something.
Yeah, because I want to keep you safe. Because like, if you look, all right, like just iTunes in general, like. If
right.
I know what the podcast is, but if you go to your iTunes page and you just look at the subjects, like,
right.
Look at the subjects back to back to back to back. If you don't, you totally are on someone's list.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I'm trying to think of which episode this was now, but I remember I was in Denver at a Starbucks doing some research. And I remember it was a very crowded Starbucks. Where I only had one place to sit, and it was my back was to the people in line getting their coffee, and so they could see. There's no way I could kind of hide my computer screen for them. And I was doing some. I'm trying to pull them up my list right now. I was doing some serial killer, I believe. So that would have been I was doing John Wayne Gacy.
Uh huh.
And so I have all these tabs open of just, you know, pictures of this. He was also dressed up as a clown. So I either have pictures of a creepy dude, serial killer kind of, you know, stuff written on the page, or I have, you know, images of, like, creepy clowns and stuff. And then he had gotten convicted early in his life on a sodomy charge, but it said something about, like, oral sex. So it didn't make sense to me how oral sex could be a sodomy charge. So then I'm looking up the legal definition of sodomy. And, I think I Googled, like, how is sodomy defined? And I came up with some big legal page, but it had, like, legal definition of sodomy in, like, huge letters. And so I just remember thinking, like, oh my God, anybody behind me, all they see on my computer is sodomy, serial killing, and clown. Like, there's, I was the creepiest guy in that coffee shop by far.
Oh, you're totally on a, if you're not on a watch list for what you're doing, you're totally on a watch list in that Starbucks.
Oh man. Yeah, no, I'm sure at least one person glanced over and was like, oh my God. Like, you know.
Yeah, they probably just try to wish you away. Like, one of the things, and like, since we're on the subject of podcasts, you've been making your rounds on other people's podcasts, myself included.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. And I have to ask this question because I am a feaster. I rocks with the crab feast. And
yeah,
I'm pretty sure this has come up, but I like, on the crab feast, you told a great story about how you moved from California back home to Idaho and growing up. And I gotta know. Hey, this is a two-part question.
Okay.
Has Chuck started any more fights with you? Any more ruckus coming from Chuck?
No. Chuck is, I'm pretty sure Chuck is terrified of me. Chuck does not hold eye contact with me since that entire incident.
And if you want to know what we're talking about, you got to listen to that episode of the Crab Feast because it was epic. I loved it.
You know, and actually, if for people who sign up, I have this premium kind of version of the podcast now, and what you get with it is it's like $5, but if you do it even just for 1 month, you get a second new stand-up album called Feel the Heat.
Okay.
And I recorded the Chuck story in Portland, Oregon, you know, at a stand-up show, and it's on that album. But it's like this 15-minute tale. But yeah, Chuck, he is still there. He's still there because he tried to sell his house after all that, after this altercation him and I had. And then he wasn't able to sell it. And then when he realized he wasn't able to sell it, then he apologized to me. I just hate him so much. I didn't like the way he apologized. So I still kind of yelled at him even for the apology. And then since then, dude won't even look at me. Like he just avoids me at all costs. He doesn't even come in his yard anymore.
Really? Like, because yeah. My second question.
I kind of freaked him out.
That was my second question. Did he sell the house? But he doesn't come outside anymore?
No, he used to hang out in the back all the time. And I think he's just waiting it out until he can leave. I think I sketched him out a little bit because I do realize I can look like a scary human being, and I chose to only show him that side of myself. But I think I am gonna get him to be out. I bet by midsummer he's gone. I bet he'll be gone.
All right, before he leaves, can you do me a personal favor, Dan?
As long as it doesn't get me arrested, yeah.
I don't know. It's going to walk the line, but I don't know how you would do this, but as a personal favor, can you find a way for Chuck to stumble across your browser history?
Oh my God, that would be great, just to make him that much more scared.
Yes!
I have thought about, there's got to be something I could do, there's... I don't know. If any, I thought about even something as scary as like roadkill. Sometimes there's some roadkill in front of my house every once in a while. Like maybe instead of just, you know, throwing it in the garbage, some little squirrel or critter gets hit, I should just like throw those in Chuck's yard.
What about like, that'd be cool. What about like accidental mail?
Oh.
You know what I mean? Like, because he's your next door neighbor. And we're playing with this browser history. Usually, before you're brought up on charges of anything, sometimes the local police send a nice little, hey, you want to come talk to us about this, that, and the third. But think about it. If he stays next door to you, your addresses are off by like one number.
You're right. Exactly. I also thought about like I told my wife, she was like, you can't do this. But I was like, I don't see how there's any law against just cleaning a rifle, like in view of your neighbor. So it's like I also thought about just like playing with guns on the back porch and just kind of stare at him, just to make it that much creepy. Because if I was him, I would want to move that much faster.
But that's the thing, you don't want to activate that like fight or flight thing in him.
Oh, that's true.
Because if you got the guns now, like, he fear for his life, you feel like he doesn't have anything else. That's why I felt like nice little conversation of, like, or like, accidental mail, something that's right, addressed to you. Because you're playing with his own nosiness to see why the cops are even contacting you.
Right. Oh, God.
Or let's think of it like this. He has to be brave enough to give you the mail that is addressed to you that was accidentally sent to his house.
Right. That makes me think of all kinds of possibilities along those lines.
I don't know why I'm egging this on, but I'm so intrigued by the story.
I could just get like a bunch of hardcore kind of like pornography and put that in an envelope and but have it be slightly open, but addressed to me somehow, and then leave his mailbox, see if he'll walk that over. Just like real kinky stuff, like real crazy stuff.
Oh my God, the possibilities are endless with Chuck because
they are.
Because I'm thinking about it, and like with Chuck, it's like I've met guys like Chuck before where they're self-absorbed, they're not thinking about you, they're thinking, I take that back, they are thinking about you because you're an obstacle for something for them to do.
Yes, exactly.
And self-absorbed, now I've heard your comedy, but self-absorbed people really bug the shit out of me.
Yep. And the world is full of so many of them, and I feel like it's gotten worse, you know, because of social media and everything. Where one of the bad parts of it is everybody is always in their little world, and they don't realize. It's like they forget that, you know, that they're actually also out in the public world. Because like in their brain somehow they're just on their Facebook feed or they're on their Instagram feed or whatever, but they're not doing it from their house. They're doing it at the movie theater. They're doing it, you know, like out on the sidewalk, and you're not paying attention to where they're walking. And it's just all those little irritations. Yeah, just so selfish. And I was raised so differently than that. Because it's so easy to be courteous. Yeah, it drives me crazy, selfish people.
Yeah, it's a golden rule. Treat how you want to be treated, man.
Right, exactly, man. You know, it doesn't take anything just to say please, thank you, excuse me. And people find it so refreshing. I always have the best conversations with Uber drivers. Travel around the country, and I feel like they're just so like hungry to talk to a passenger who is just not a jerk, you know, somebody who's just not completely ignoring them or just being rude to them, you know. And it's sad, you know. I have a reputation in comedy clubs, and I only say this because it's been said to me a bunch of times, of being a nice guy, which kind of makes me sad because I don't see myself as being that nice at the comedy clubs. I just don't try to be a jerk, but like the bar is so low that just by being polite, I'm like a breath of fresh air, apparently.
Like, give me an example. What do you mean? Because, I mean, like, maybe this is my Midwestern naivete or whatever, but, you know, like, little stuff, like, say hi or how you doing, or, like, you see someone doing something, you give them 2 minutes before you bum rush them with whatever your demands
are. Right.
I'm curious, what is your examples?
Well, a lot of people don't. I mean, apparently, like, that's just what I do. I like what you're saying. I just try to be courteous. But I guess I hear from, like, wait, you know, comedy club wait staff things. But, you know, a lot of comics coming through, they just very demanding, very rude, you know, don't address people unless they just kind of need something, and then kind of bark at them, complain about, you know, stuff all the time. Just rude. Just, you know, just like just the way they carry themselves. Just rude people. Don't tip them. Don't thank them. You know, just like they're just there to serve them for the weekend or whatever.
Like I'm very big on that. Like even if you are not my waiter or waitress, and I necessarily don't leave you a tip because you're not my waiter or waitress, I will say excuse me, thank you. Like one thing I go out of my way to do when it's time to tip.
Right.
I do not do it on my card if I can. If I can avoid it. Like what I do, I take the cash and give it to that one specific waiter or waitress that was helping me and say like, hey, I don't want you guys to divvy it up. I don't know if it's some backstage politics. I don't know. But I want you to have that. Yeah.
Yeah, but a lot of people, you know, sadly, a lot of people don't think that way. I don't know. They just, and I don't know why they don't. I don't really get it. You know, I feel like there's a lot of people. I don't know. Maybe I noticed this in L.A. more, but there's a lot of people who know how to be nice. They know how to do those things, and it's clear to me they do, because if it's someone who could, like, help their career, or they think it's socially important, they'll be nice to those people, and they'll go out of their way to be nice to those people. But if it's somebody they feel like beneath them socially, or somebody who can't, you know, help them get ahead in any way, it's like those people just don't exist to them. You know, I see it all the time. Like, I'd meet a comic who would be super nice to the headliner, but rude to everybody else.
That's crazy. It's backwards. I'm the guy who would be nice to everyone, and like the headliner or something, I'm not going to be a dick, but I'm just going to be like, all right, respect. I'm pretty much going to stay out of that person's way, if that makes sense.
Right. Yep, me too, man. Me too. And, you know, I feel like, you know, you and I were probably just, you know, raised correctly, and a lot of people just aren't, you know. And that is what I see as a parent now. In my kid's school, you see these kids who are having, you know, being problems in the classroom. And you're like, what is this kid's deal? And then you meet their parents, and you're like, okay, that is that kid's deal.
Yeah.
You know, that kid is getting no instruction at home. You know, they have a parent who's, you know, just as rude as they are in the classroom. Like, okay, that's, you know, if you're raised like that, I guess you just don't know any different in a sense.
Right, and you brought up the parenting question. And I think this is my last question, because I got to let you go. I understand I may have exceeded my time, but... as a parent, and I'm a fan of your comedy, has that come up where the kids are now starting to look at your stuff on YouTube, or hear the weird stories? Like, all right, for starters, if you just Google your name, your Comedy Central, the storytelling show, that comes up. That's like one of the first things that come up.
Doing acid, yeah. No, for sure. I have to be aware of that. Well, actually, on my last album, I had a really funny bit I wanted to do about my daughter, and my wife was like, no. She's like, there's no way you can do that. She's like, Monroe is at an age now where, you know, kids are aware of you, and kids tease each other, and it was a weird thing she had done kind of in the puberty space, and she was like, nope. She's like, I was doing jokes about Kyler, but, you know, she just, you know, reminded me that boys tease each other in a different way than girls tease each other. And no joke is just, like, worth possibly, you know, ruining her socially for years. So I have to think about that stuff now. I have to think about, like, if my kid's friends heard this, how is that going to affect my kids? And I also have to think about the parents, too. Like, there's some, you know, jokes I'm doing about the classroom where I don't care if the parent that I don't like is able to kind of figure out that I probably am talking about them.
Okay.
Because, you know, they're not somebody I'm interested in having a social relationship with. But I also don't want to just to give them a bunch of evidence to sue me. You know, I don't want to make Chuck, I didn't change his name, and that's why I put that track on a secret album, because that's just funny to me.
Like, the flip side with Chuck, and I only imagine the other way, if they, the people, do they feel embarrassed? Now, Chuck, we could put him, he's in the world all his own.
Right.
But,
right.
Like, let's say your wife or your mom, your auntie, or whoever, they listen to that and they're just like, oh, man. They're like that weird thing where you're embarrassed on someone else's behalf. Have you ever had anything like that?
I mean, my mom gets embarrassed on my behalf. My mom, she's embarrassed by a lot of the things I've said on stage. And like the drug story you referenced, I mean, she hates that. She hates that that's out there. But I look at it like, out of respect for my mom, I won't make fun of my mom in certain ways because I don't want to, like, humiliate her. But when I'm talking about me, then I don't care what she thinks. I'm gonna say whatever I want to say about me. But I do try to be respectful of, like, you know, with my wife, I'll joke with her, but I'll also ask her, like, are you sure this is okay for me to do? You know, and then she can give it the green light, or she can say, no, that's too much. But when it comes to my own personal stories, anything's game.
Okay. All right, but Dan, thank you so much for just calling into the podcast, man. This has been a treat. This is... This we can't have this just end just right here. You got to come back. But before you leave, please plug all things Dan Cummins. Where can they find you? Social media one more time.
Yeah, thank you, Sam. Thank you so much, Sam. They can find me at dancummins.tv, all the tour dates, and then timesuckpodcast.com, all the podcast information. And it's just Time Suck Podcast on social media, and then Dan Cummins Comedy on social media for all the stand-up stuff. They can Google me.
I bet they can. When they Google you, they go find something. But but thanks so much, Dan, for calling in.
Thank you, Sam. I appreciate it.
Bye.
Bye.